Jason Burmis on today's News Talk TNT.
May we live in interesting times, and interesting they are indeed. So I want to start with this. Donald Trump, in my humble opinion, as I have now stated for years, all right, and this goes back before he officially announced that what? He was going to run. I said, if he runs for president, they will charge him criminally. I'm not Nostradamus. In fact, I think all that stuff is Johnny nonsense. I saw the political environment. I saw what was happening. Lo and behold, that actually did happen with criminal charges. Now, with the lawsuits in New York, I said, it doesn't matter. They're going to find him guilty. They found him guilty. Okay? And now he's in a place where the $175 million bond that he was able to secure, that he shouldn't have had to secure in the first place, Letitia James is trying to tell the judge not to accept because it's not properly insured. But when we get to the criminal cases, that's where it's important. Because immediately as I saw these criminal cases, I said, what? They are going to try these criminal cases on the run-up to the election, and I go, in at least one of them, if not several of them, they will find him guilty. Now, again, this isn't just my lifetime. This is the history of the presidency. And you can bet, first of all, this obviously would not be happening with somebody else. And again, an imperfect vessel Trump is, but he did make a lot of the right moves in foreign policy. He was America first in some regards. And once again, he wasn't an outrageous warmonger popping off proxy wars with first world nations and allowing the Middle East to get to a point where last night many thought, hey, we might just be kicking off World War III, Iran, Israel style. Just saying. Imperfect. But those things weren't happening. So now we have a ruling that on Monday, we're starting this first one up. Tops, folks. Tops. This trial lasts 2 months. It might get fast-tracked. It might be 6 weeks. Do you think the jury's going to be impartial? Or do you think they're going to find him guilty? And then what? Then we got three more cases. We got a whole presidential election. We got different reasons why we can take this guy off the ballot. And this is real talk. Like, this is actually happening in our country while we're on the cusp of global warfare. Is anybody happy about this? I mean, there are, I guess, some sycophants, sociopaths, psychopaths, ignorant and brainwashed folks out there that are. But I would say the vast majority of us are extremely upset. And, you know, I'm not going to break my jump to conclusions, Matt, out here. But a lot of that environment now has caused self-immolation to take off in the United States as it's never before done. In fact, because it's never happened before. I can't name a time in the United States where self-immolation was a form of protest. Now, within a couple of months, we've seen it on a couple of fronts. Obviously, the Palestinian situation, the first one. And again, I'm reserving my judgment, but if what is out there is to be believed, and the person that did this has social media posts, has a manifesto just before, this is going to be jumped on by the media as a conspiracy theorist and why you shouldn't do your own research. We're going to talk about that and a lot more, but right now I want to talk about something a little more fun. How about a weekend truth festival? If you'd like to see all your favorite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend, then listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Katie Shimarani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizier, Mark Atwood, David Clues, allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd and 4th and 5th in May in Workington near the Lake District in the United Kingdom. All you need is to bring a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes, as food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. But don't hang around, because only a limited number of places are still available. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk to Adam Clark about this immolation issue. Very much so. Stay tuned. It's TNT Radio Live.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The man who set himself on fire outside the Manhattan courthouse where Donald Trump's hush money trial is taking place has been identified, as well as his incredibly convoluted reasoning for why he did it. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT producer Adam Clark. Adam, bring the ruckus on this ultra bizarre story.
Did you say bizarre? I see no problem here, Jason. Doesn't this kind of thing happen all the time? Don't people just set themselves on fire in front of a trial of the former sitting U.S. president who is in trouble for allegedly falsifying business records in his dealings with trying to quiet a former porn star? This happens every day. And said individual, of course, would leave an online manifesto. Why not? It is 2024, after all. Yeah, that's exactly where we are. Most people watch this whole event unfold live on television. So let that sink in, because this is a dangerous trend right there in and of itself. I watched, it was the CNN clip. I didn't watch it live, but after it was shared, I watched the CNN clip, and I swear, somebody proved me wrong, but the CNN reporter got visibly excited when they thought that there was a live shooting taking place. She was like, oh, and we got a live shooter. A man has set himself on. The person looked quite excited for the fact that a tragedy was unfolding and she was about to catch it live on camera. So did all the people standing around whipping out their cell phones instead of trying to help this poor person. But anyways, let's go with the facts here. According to the New York Police Department, in a statement at the press conference, this individual has been identified as Max Azzarello. He walked into a park directly across the street from the trial this is across from the Manhattan courthouse. He poured some sort of flammable liquid on himself and then lit it on fire. Mr. Azzarello was later rushed to the hospital. The latest reports I see say he is in critical condition at a burn unit. The dramatic incident was, as I mentioned, captured on video, shows what appears to be a backpack, a can of gas, a man kneeling and holding his head with his hands as a raging fire engulfs him. Several people can be heard screaming in the background while an unidentified witness calls for someone to bring a fire extinguisher. The blaze rages for about a half a minute. The figure then falls backwards. Moments later, a group of people, including several police officers, can be seen running up to him. The first person attempts to put out the fire with what looks to be like a suit jacket, retreats, probably because of the intensity of the flames. Soon thereafter, someone finally arrives with a fire extinguisher and douses the burning man with said extinguishing. This is crazy. So that's what happened. Now, here's what's happened since. Apparently, the dude left an online manifesto. I guess he dropped like a pile of pamphlets before he set himself on fire, leading them to what is called the Ponzi Papers, which is a Substack. Here is some of what he wrote in his supposed alleged online manifesto. My name is Max Azzarello, and I am an investigative researcher who has set himself on fire outside of the Trump trial in Manhattan. And in quote, that is how it begins. Mr. Azzarello claims that a totalitarian conspiracy is in play, orchestrated by the U.S. government and its allies, aiming to impose a fascist world order. Quoting from his Substack, the papers thing, quote, "This extreme act of protest is to draw attention to an urgent and important discovery. We are victims of a totalitarian con, and our own government, along with many of their allies, is about to hit us with an apocalyptic fascist world coup. These claims sound like fantastical conspiracy theory, but they are not. They are proof of conspiracy. If you investigate this mountain of research, you will prove them too. If you learn a great deal about Ponzi schemes, you will discover that our life is a lie. If you follow this story and the links below, you will discover the rotten truth of quote-unquote post-truth America. You will learn the scariest and stupidest story in world history, and you will realize that we are all in a desperate state of emergency that requires your action. And then I'll add this part. To my friends and family, witnesses, and first responders, I deeply apologize for inflicting this pain upon you, but I assure you it is a drop in the bucket compared to what our government intends to inflict. And then he finishes off, at least this part, because these words are true, this is an act of revolution, end quote. Wow, Jason, there are 100 million things to unpack right there. I'm just going to hand it over to you and let's do this thing.
So, first of all, well, let's start with the fact that you are correct. This is broadcast live, and now we're in this place. First of all, New York City, I don't blame anybody for not running up on this guy. If you saw it, there was a ton of fire. And this is New York City, and not only are you going to have a police presence there, but it is Trump's trial. You would expect there is also a Secret Service presence there as well. And by the way, if you actually measure 30 seconds from the time that he does it to the time they get, that's actually a pretty darn good police response. You look at what happened in D.C., it was a couple minutes. People think things like that are going to be immediate, the shock. And then, like, the first guy, like you said, runs in, throws it over. You know, you needed an extinguisher. This was a very graphic and real thing. His social media feed. So already I'm seeing some posts from his Instagram in which he had lit himself, or his friend actually lit him on fire in a Jesus pose and jumped into a pool of water. On top of that, there's another of him driving in a car singing Start a Revolution Today. You know, what do you have to lose? And I just want to say this. I don't believe in revolution, okay? I am a reformationist. I want to reform our Constitution and Bill of Rights, our constitutional republic. I would love to do so nonviolently. You know, every kind of provocation, every time I hear about revolution, it always seems to have to be violent. And folks, it's not going to turn out great for the general populace, the civilians, the serf class. Just letting you know. When I read his short manifesto, which had a bunch of links, for instance, the history of the world, the true history of the world, which takes you after World War II, and it's a whole other manifesto. There were a couple things that struck me. First of all, you just mentioned post-truth America. How long have I been talking about the post-truth world? And it's not because I coined that term. That term was used as a list set, as one of the topics that were released by the Bilderberg Group all the way back in 2017. So now I talk about post-truth. He talked about post-truth. He's a crazy person that let himself on fire. Let's go a little bit further. In it, he also talked about the Central Intelligence Agency and other agencies being close to Charles Manson and the Manson family murders. And anybody who knows about the book Chaos, it's a work that took over 20 years. It does not make any direct allegations, but there are certainly connections there. And it's, you know, again, something based in fact. But then you trickle down the line, and obviously some of this is rather schizophrenic. And there's even talk of a cryptocurrency scheme, a Ponzi scheme, if you will, that relates to this story, but is extremely unclear how, right? I would also not be surprised if this person was heavily medicated, and that part we will never know. But yeah, I mean, we're in crazy times right now, Adam. I did not think self-immolation was going to be, can you name a time in this country that anybody else has ever self-immolated other than the previous one just a couple months ago?
Actually, there are occasionally these types of things happening, but they're very personal, and it's usually a suicide attempt. I remember I'm originally from New Hampshire, but not that long ago, probably within the last 5 years or so, there was a man at the end of his rope. Actually, I think this took place during the coronavirus. We saw things like this happen. They were just at the end of their rope. They were depressed, broke. And so they light themselves on fire in front of like City Hall. So occasionally you will see that, but not like this. Definitely not like this, where it's an intentional protest. They are linking this. They're saying that, people are saying all sorts of things about this guy. They're saying, oh, look, he was a Bernie supporter. Oh, look, he's a this. Oh, look, he's a that, which just proves what this is already serving is to just lump people together to discredit them. I mean, honestly, you could probably look at what this guy wrote on his alleged Substack, if he really indeed wrote that or whatever, right? So I have to take all this with a grain of salt. I can't prove it for myself yet. But the things that he's talking about, as you mentioned, are similar to the types of things that you talk about, or maybe I talk about, or maybe the listener or the audience member might have discovered this if they didn't know, take it out of context from like the first, to remove that first part where he says, I'm going to set myself on fire. You know nothing about the dude, you read this post and you're like, yeah, I'm down with what this guy is putting. Yeah, I'm picking up what he's putting down. And then now guess what? You're in big trouble, Buster. So I think that's where this is headed.
I don't necessarily disagree. Adam, we'll see you in the second hour. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we got Todd McGreevy. This guy's been in the independent journalism game for over 3 decades. Print publication, rcreader.com. You're not going to want to miss it. More after this. It's TNT Radio Live.
TNT's Rick Munn.
The U.S. have provided assurances to prevent Julian Assange's appeal against extradition. So the death penalty will not be imposed, they said, but WikiLeaks founder's wife, Stella Assange, said he will not be afforded First Amendment protections. So last month, two judges deferred a decision on whether Assange, who is trying to avoid being prosecuted in the US on espionage charges, clearly relating to the publication of thousands of classified documents that they say endanger life and so on and so forth. So bottom line is here, the US government have said, pinky promise, we won't put him to death when he gets there. Yeah, that's a little bit like if a crocodile could talk or a great white could talk and you're on a surfboard and you're thinking of going into the ocean for a little dip and he said, don't worry, I won't bite.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
A hoax about carbon dioxide in the climate has caused a global energy and economic disaster. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we are now joined by an individual I was lucky enough to come across very early on in my travels here in the Quad Cities in Iowa. Someone who's been an on-the-ground journalist here for 3+ decades. He is the founder of the River Cities Reader. You can check it out over at rcreader.com. And oftentimes here, we talk about looking in the mirror and being your own hero. And what? Free and fair elections. And Todd has really been on the ground of trying to audit our election system and make them as free and fair as possible. I know most people, they're not concerned about Iowa, but in the primary season that has long passed every several years. But I would propose, again, we don't just preach it, we do it here. And if we had more people like Todd that were trying to audit these things and keep up on our county commissioners, etc., we'd have less problems in the system. So right now, we've got this process formality. I need you to lay it out in plain English. First of all, thank you for joining us. Tell us what's going on in Scott County, Iowa.
Thanks, Jason. Scott County, Iowa, here on the banks of the Mississippi River in eastern Iowa. Davenport and Bettendorf are the two major cities there in Scott County, Iowa. And last November, the county auditor brought forward a proposal to purchase new poll book software and hardware. And that is what is manages the voter registration when people come to vote at the there's 66 precincts in Scott County. So there's 66 poll book poll books, if you will, and then there's subsidiaries of those. And Diane Holst, who's a former county supervisor, was monitoring the agendas and so forth. And up came this consent agenda where they had 20 items that the county supervisors, there's five of them, wanted to put into a consent agenda, meaning let's get all this stuff. Backing up a second for people who probably know this. Committee of the Whole happens on a certain date in city council and county meetings. And then a day or two later comes the board meeting. So the Committee of the Whole is where all the sausage is being made. Everybody kind of talks through with the staff. What are we looking at? What are the pros and cons? They look at what's called the green sheet or the memo about the particular matter. And then they kind of figure it out, ask questions, let it be vetted. And then they kind of move on to the, okay, 2 days later, we're going to vote up or down on this and move it to the regular board meeting. Well, this was right before Thanksgiving in November. And the county supervisors decided they were going to collapse in 1 hour, a committee of the whole and a regular meeting, and have a 20-item consent agenda, of which included a $450,000 acquisition of new poll book software. So this was a flag.
So let me just stop you right here. So, again, they're trying to smash it together to kind of circumvent any oversight by the public, correct?
Yes, there was like a 24-hour notice that this was even on the agenda, this being this item by the county auditor to change the poll book software. And, you know, my wife, who's the editor of the newspaper we publish, and Diane's a good friend of ours, who's a county supervisor, they've both been volunteers at the polls. They've sat there and used the poll book software that people, when they come to vote, they say, okay, here's your ID. They scan it into this little scanner and then they pull it up. They say, okay, now here's your ballot because you're in certain district, you're in certain precinct and so forth. And that's the management of the data in, right? The data in that's coming in and the eligible voters. And the incumbent software and hardware is a thing called Iowa Precinct Atlas Consortium, IPAC for short. And it's a consortium of 80 plus counties in Iowa that started 10, 15 years ago, where they did their own homegrown version of poll book software and hardware. Now they're using Microsoft tools, Microsoft products and scanners and so forth for all these years. And we've been using them in Scott County for years. There's never been any issues with them. This new auditor comes in, and she was appointed, by the way. And then she decided she wanted to change the poll books to tablets. And so anyway, let's go to November. Here's the consent agenda. We get this at 24-hour notice. So several of us start emailing questions to the supervisors and the auditor and saying, hey, before you approve this to go to the consent agenda, how about you ask these questions? And it included the questions about what the one sheet that the auditor put out, and asking backup questions about comments that she made, like, hey, this provider is the only one that understands current Iowa election law. Really? You're telling me that the consortium of 80 counties you've been using for over a dozen years doesn't understand election law? She says this in writing. And we're like, hey, supervisors, supervise, ask the question. How are you saying that this new person, you want to take the highest bid, by the way, this backup is like laws in Iowa state that for bidding processes, you take the lowest bid unless there are extenuating circumstances or service issues. So that wasn't articulated in any of the memos to the supervisors to approve this. There was no service issues documented. It was just, we want to go with this new thing. We want to go with these tablets. And so we challenged them. We went to the supervisors meeting. We went before them. We asked the questions that we asked them during the day. I called all five supervisors before the meeting. Anyway, they rubber stamped it. They put it in consent agenda and they approved it.
Let me stop you and really talk about why this is important. Because when you look at what happened in the 2020 election, you weren't really allowed to have what would be regular polling because there were so many mail-in ballots, and there's a way to circumvent that. I've often said this time around, if they don't go with those tools through, you will have polling. So if the polling is so much off from the final vote, then you might actually be able to argue a real audit in court. If you're able to take over the software now that takes care of the polls, and the polls just magically match the vote, then, wow, you're a real conspiracy theorist if you think that the voting and the machines there are corrupt, and then the polling software, which is separate, but probably proprietary and unable to be audited as well. And like you just said, very strange that they would take the highest bid, aka there being extenuating circumstances that are not explained. Well, this is the most important election ever. We got to make it the most secure ever. We need secure polling software too. This reeks of corruption. This is a completely underrated story. I'm going to let you go for the next like 40 seconds before we hit the break. What else should we know about this case?
We should know that after it was approved in November, Diane continued with FOIA requests and uncovered the fact that the auditor broke the law and didn't publish the bid notices. And they had to redo it in January and do it all over. And we, through that FOIA request, we got uncovered a lot more information. And in the last month's issue, we published a full timeline of all that, which we can talk about in detail and explain how this was fast tracked. And when the auditor went back to the bidders, she said, "We have a process formality. Oh, due to a process formality, we have to actually do this properly." So, yes, that should be a term that should be ensconced, a process formality.
Well, it's always a mistake, and if anything goes wrong, it's an abnormality, it's a glitch, et cetera, it's an error. There's never, ever, ever any malice out there. We got to take that break. We're going to come back. We're going to continue to talk about this case and more. We're going to talk whether or not America is the new empire and what are the similarities and differences with Rome. Todd McGreevy is our guest. More TNT Radio Live after the headlines.
What a news day this is turning out to be.
Wait till you hear this.
Now, TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The Biden administration has finalized changes to Title IX, expanding the definition of sex discrimination to include harassment based on sex stereotypes, sex characteristics, pregnancy, sexual orientation, and gender identity. Apple has removed the Meta-owned applications WhatsApp and Threads from its App Store in China at the direction of the country's top internet regulator, the Cyberspace Administration of China.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
And quite frankly, I don't know that I will ever look as impressive as the old poot topless on a horse or a bear or whatever AI creates in the future. Separate topic.
Yes.
Todd, again, one of the great things I love about your publication, and again, it's been around for years. It's in print form. It used to be bi-monthly. It's monthly now. It's tough out there, I know. But you have this timeline. So break down some of the bullet points that you were able to find out through this FOIA.
Well, let's back up a second here. One of the things that was important to realize is that during that meeting in November, we those of us who were asking questions asked enough questions where it was said, well, what's the problem with the incumbent again? And it was never in writing. It was verbalized, but out of that there were service issues. Well, what kind of service issue? Well, they only have one tech person available on election night was what was said. And that was how the board decided to say, okay, oh gosh, they just can't keep up. We got a big election coming up. They're understaffed. Yes. In real time during that meeting in November, I go to the IPAC website and there's six tech people right at their website with their profiles.
So you're telling me they blatantly lied to you when you asked that question?
Well, they blatantly lied to the board. So we called the head of the IPAC shortly thereafter in November and had a nice dialogue. And in our December edition, we published our review of all of this and all the questions we asked and didn't leave it alone. And then subsequently, Diana Donnelly's FOIA request moving forward. And in the issue that's on stands now and at our website at rcreader.com, you can see that the timeline that we published about all the things that were disclosed, they include that there was no actual bid from the incumbent in November. It was a made up bid and there was no actual bid whatsoever from the incumbent. And then as you move forward, we got results or input from IPAC and they gave us the accounting of any of the service issues that there may have been. And in since 2013, there have only been 4 service calls that they've logged, and only one during an election period. That's it. So there is no like smoking gun that the current system doesn't work. It all has to do, in our view, with perceived ease of use. It's easier here. And Jason, this is what my view.
See,
is
you're something. Being nice. Perceived ease of use. I see backdoor corruption, but you know what? I'm a conspiracy nut. How dare I even question it?
And Jason, your intuition is usually on point. And I think is happening. We should all be aware of this, because when you go to the article at the Reader's website, you'll see we have a photograph. It's 10X, T-E-N-E-X is the software and the hardware that's being used, or the provider that's being used for this. And when you go to get your ballot, typically you have to hand sign a piece of paper here in Iowa to get your ballot. So to register, you know, like, here, I've just got my ballot, and there is a trail of a hand signature. Our view is that because now we're using iPads, and the scanner's in the iPad because the camera is the scanner. There's not a separate device. And trust me, I'm not a fan of Microsoft either. Okay. So it's not like I have a dog in this hunt, but they're trying to go with paperless. This is the thing.
Now it's so much easier to cheat. You don't even have to manufacture the actual fake signatures. You can do so digitally. And in an age of AI, you know how long that takes? That takes a blink of an eye.
Yes.
Milliseconds. So now, all right. I want to shift gears. Listen, yeah. I want to shift gears to this other story, because we only got a few minutes left in the segment. And one of the things I love about The Reader is that you do take on the big issues. You've allowed me to do big op-eds on Elon Musk and others. Mm-hmm. You got this piece on the Roman Empire and the United States. And, you know, why'd you guys do this? And what do you think the similarities and differences are? Because I always hear about failing empires, but I see a lot of what's going on right now as a controlled demolition of our constitutional republic at the behest or the altar of modern day globalism.
It is absolutely a controlled demolition. And we've published articles in a fascinating cartoon by Ed Newman about that. But back to your statement about that was an article we published by John Whitehead of the and his daughter Nisha, of the Rutherford Institute, which is a phenomenal organization. Everybody should check out Rutherford.org. They are more of the libertarian ACLU, if you will. They file amicus briefs at the Supreme Court for property protection and freedom of speech protection and Fourth Amendment protections all the time. They're well worth supporting. We publish their articles often. He published an article that was about, it was on the cusp of Easter, and we came out right before Easter. And so this was a timely piece. And we put the headline in, what would Jesus do, you know, with regards to American Empire versus Roman Empire, and how would Jesus deal with what was going on in terms of how America is proceeding right now? And John goes into a great detail of everything from how we're dealing with, you know, the foreign wars, the surveillance, the violations of the Fourth Amendment. These are old saws, but it's repetition of message that counts, that we have to continue to remind people. Julian Assange is mentioned many times in this. And he also goes into great detail about how Jesus was the original revolutionary. He was the one who upended the system. He lived and died in a police state, is what John writes about. And we thought it was a really inspiring article, and that's why we published it.
And, you know, you and I, we're not real big Bible thumpers out there, but this is put into such a stark political context that I think that, yeah, sure, it could speak to Christians, but it speaks to everybody, right? Because at the end of the day, it's speaking to a base morality. Right? Are we for freedom of speech? Are we for peace? Are we for the truth? Or are we for this new NPR motto that we shouldn't start at the truth and the First Amendment is actually a huge obstacle? Todd, you've been in this game for, again, 30 plus years on the ground level. When you see something like that from an outlet like NPR, which even myself utilized a ton back in the day, even when I was with InfoWars, the early 2000s, even the late 90s when I started looking at news, and it was never my favorite thing. I never thought it would get to the level where the CEO literally says, we're not starting at the truth and the First Amendment is an obstacle. So what are your thoughts wrapping that up?
Well, it's National Propaganda Radio, and here in Iowa, it's Iowa Public Radio. And years ago, when Ron Paul was running for office, they did a hit piece on Ron Paul, and I lost my mind, and I called up the ombudsman of the state of Iowa, and I got to the director of Iowa Public Radio, and I challenged him about how he positioned what they said on the radio. And he said out loud to me, he said, no, we have a democratic socialist country. That's what we're in. That was told to me by an Iowa Public Radio executive years ago. So this has been this ethos that's inside public radio is not new. It's frankly monitoring the opposition. I listen to them every morning to hear what they're saying. It's flabbergasting when you listen to the things that come out of their mouths regarding climate change and fear porn with all that. It's out of control. And fortunately in Iowa, the regents voted to withdraw funding of Iowa Public Radio.
So again, these people shouldn't be funded on any level. It's absolutely absurd and obscene. And I don't need somebody talking like this that isn't a programmed AI or robot I'm watching in a Kubrick film. Todd, thank you so much for joining us. We got to take a break. We're going to come back. More of the show after this. You're not going to want to miss it. It is TNT Radio Live.
My name's Stacy. I'm 57, and I was adopted in 2020.
We were adopted in 2019.
And we were adopted in 2021.
We had a house, and it sounds crazy, but it wasn't a home. The one thing that Jake and Emma brought is it became a home.
When I met Dakota, he had just turned 14.
You weren't there for the first this and the first that. I missed the first words, but we got a lot of other firsts.
Watching her say, oh my God, I cannot believe I got my license. And she's like, I passed. And I'm like, girl.
See them grow. It is.
They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
You and you.
Kids in the middle.
What I thought was a complete life was nowhere near complete. But it is now.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
Jason Burmis on today's News Talk, TNT.
Inflation is real, and let me tell you, so is the cost of housing going up, whether you're renting or trying to own. It's an election year. I don't know that it's going anywhere, but we're going to talk to Joseph Lombardi from Ironhawk Financial about it. Thank you so much for joining us, sir. You know, Biden, Bidenomics, they've tried to sell us on transitory inflation. They've tried to tell us it was 3%, 9%, 13% max. But the truth of the matter is we're still paying about double for gas than we were in the last election cycle. The standards like butter, eggs, milk, in many cases, have doubled. And that's nothing compared to the housing market and the cost of energy also going up. So is there any end in sight? Will it make a difference who's elected this time around? And how should people be navigating this financially?
Yeah, I mean, I only see two outcomes happening with this presidential election. I believe they may allow Trump to win. They're going to keep the market up on stilts. I mean, the market's been sick for a very, very long time. We owe $300 trillion between U.S. unfunded liabilities, Medicare, Social Security, and our national debt. Taxes here in the United States, highest marginal, were, you know, 80, 90% in the 60s, 70% in the 80s. So what I think is going to happen is they're just going to let the market stay high, put Trump in, because I believe our elections aren't fair anymore. And I believe they already are going to do what they're going to do because they have power to way more than we do. And they're going to let Trump win. Republicans will be very happy. Conservatives, patriots, we're going to put money in the markets. We're assuming Trump's going to save us. And then the major hedge funds that have been keeping this company up on stilts, because that's where all the money went during COVID. Even the money that came to the general public all went to the major box stores. They're the only ones open, and all the small businesses were closed. So all that money is going to go to the top. They've been buying call options like crazy to keep the market up. They're just going to start buying some stops. And I think they're going to crash the economy and then blame Trump so that Republicans can't have the ability to say, oh, Trump was so great. Market was so good. That's why I believe we're seeing an uptick in the market in the last 12 months. And I don't see that continuing for much longer.
So that is a take I do not hear very often. A lot of people think that they won't be installing or allowing Trump to win. However, you think that that is the move to have the controlled demolition of the economy under him. I certainly agree that it's been up on stilts for some time. You talked about $300 trillion in debt. It's a, you know, I don't know whether this is a meme or not, but it's being reported we're printing up $1 trillion every 100 days, which is absolutely obscene. We don't really know the limitation to which we printed all that money during 2020 to 2022 and put it into circulation. Yes, there's been some deflation, I guess, but again, we don't know how many of those assets are out there, but we do know that the resources and assets have been consolidated on a large scale. So if in fact this does take place under Trump, I mean, obviously the talk of a central bank digital currency has been around there. Trump is kind of pushed back on the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, a little bit. Do you feel he'll have no choice, just like the COVID 1984 nightmare, that he'll have to just bend the knee to whatever?
Yeah, I mean, what drives the Democrats crazy when we talk about Trump, low gas prices, as you just did a few minutes ago, and we talk about how the economy was so well? So what better way to shut up the patriots, the conservatives, and the Republicans is to say, okay, here's your faithful leader, your MAGA leader, and we are going to pull the rug, meaning all the hedge funds, BlackRock, Vanguard, Oppenheimer, are all going to band together easily, like you see crypto, how it goes up and down so fast is deregulated. Stocks aren't that regulated anymore, believe it or not. So when you understand the power they have to just pull the rug, crash the economy, millions and millions and millions of people are going to lose their homes because inflation is going to keep going up. We've never experienced, our parents never experienced a time where inflation was going up like crazy, but the market was going down. So your dollar's not worth as much and you're making less. That's a double whammy. And Americans as a whole don't save. We have no foundations. We have no life, no disability, no pensions. So where are we going to go to try and fill the hole in the ship? And they know that. And it's all, in my opinion, design collapse, install Trump and say, here you go. Here's your savior. And then boom, crash the market. And then say, see, under Biden, we were up 20% in 2023. Everyone was happy. And then Trump won. And now look what's going on, guys. That's your fault. When it's all planned to buy low, sell high. That's what all the wealthy hedge funds do.
So there's a couple things that I want to hit on that you just said. First of all, you know, I would say my grandparents, not even my parents' generation, my grandparents, they did save. They owned their house outright. They owned their car. And then I would say somewhere in the 80s, it was now chic to get credit and loan everything out. They were giving everybody credit. And now, you know, you didn't buy your car even in payments anymore. You leased your car for 100,000 miles and 10 years. And you didn't really buy your house. You had 30-year mortgages before you bought your house, and you were continually paying way more in property taxes. Meanwhile, people were able to accrue a lot of debt on these credit cards and then claim bankruptcy on a level we've never seen before. By that time, we'd also had a socialized system where welfare became more commonplace, Medicare, Medicaid, et cetera, and all these other programs, to the point where we get to about 2010, 2015, more than 40, if not 50% of the country is on some kind of an entitlement program from the government. So we are extremely debt-based. Now, you also talked about crypto, and I'm wondering how you think that these things might relate. You know, you look at Bitcoin, for instance, And especially at the heights of COVID, it had a huge surge. It hit up to $60,000. People bought into the idea it would go to six figures because there were also altcoin explosions, all these things. Rug gets pulled from under. It actually dips down to under 20. It's back to 63 again. The halvening is literally here tomorrow. Now, I know a lot of the tech nerds don't know what that means, but essentially, this was something through proof of work and using energy through graphics cards you could mine. Now it's going to be twice as hard to mine something that was almost really not profitable to mine in the first place because of energy costs. Where is this taking us? Because obviously the baseline for what they'd like to take us into is some type of a blockchain technology, right? But we are so indebted and enslaved already to the government on so many levels, it's got to be even more than just a dollar type currency or a PayPal type system. This is the beginning, if not the nail in the coffin, of a social credit score on top of it, is it not?
Yeah, so I think we are building the government's system or their home with our dollars, our brains, our technology. We're building a crypto system for the government to basically emulate. We're putting money into it, right? 63,000 a coin today. So what is the government going to do? If it really thought crypto was a threat, wouldn't the federal government just say it's illegal? Like alcohol and cigarettes and weed and all the different things throughout the years that they couldn't control because of the hemp. And if they felt they couldn't control it, they would have stopped it. So to me, I look at crypto as almost a CIA operative project.
Wait a minute. Wait, you mean that Satoshi, whatever his name is, isn't the secret founder of Bitcoin? Listen, I've said this for years, obviously. You know, we've had digitized money on a lot of different levels. You look at PayPal, the first kind of popularized version, Peter Thiel, there's a guy that's in Palantir, you know, obviously a Bilderberg Security Council member, very big in there. That's just one aspect of it. And you look at SDRs, you had that digitized currency of zeros and ones that could just be loaned out by the IMF, not on the blockchain yet, but now they literally do have blockchain people because they are running an IMF program and those people through their biometric information, everybody. So the idea that this is some kind of conspiracy theory or couldn't take place on a mass level, it's already taking place on a micro level with some of the most powerful institutions out there. Isn't that correct?
Oh, absolutely. If you think for one second that crypto is some free place that the government has no control over, that they can't do anything with, you're out of your mind. And if the government wants to do something, they would definitely do it. They have the gold. The who has the gold has the golden rule. They have the military. They have the police brainwashed to beat up its own citizens, break the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment. We've seen all these audits everywhere on social media. They don't care. So it's all set up. And people want hope. We do. But we are enslaved through taxation and now debt. Between mortgages, car payments, student loans, credit cards. You work January all the way to August to September. If you add state, federal, FICA, Medicare, unemployment, Social Security, you add sales, you add tobacco, alcohol, all these taxes, cell phone. And then on top of it, you're paying interest on debt. So there is no, the only thing you can do is clean up your home. And they make Americans lazy. They don't teach us anything in college. They want to give us gender studies. They want to give us these things that don't have any relevance to becoming a successful human. And they don't want us to touch into our God. They don't want to touch into our light. And it's all about suppression. And it's all about keeping you dumb because dumb people are controllable and smart people are not.
So let's talk about this right now, because I don't want to go all doom and gloom. We got at least another 6 minutes. in the broadcast. And I, and by the way, I don't necessarily disagree with anything you said. I still think they're trying to keep Trump out of there, and they try to do a slow march as much as possible, because I mean, what are you going to blame Joe Biden? He didn't run anything anyway. He can't speak. He can barely not drool while the ice cream slobbers on his cheeks. So how do people protect themselves? I think that obviously when you said, you know, you got to clean your own house up, you got to kind of realize what I just said here. You don't want to be in debt. You might want some hard assets in gold and silver. If you can have real estate, that is a market that doesn't really see an end in sight right now, especially if it's good real estate. And then, you know, I always say have a plan. You look at the COVID-1984 nightmare, all these things are useless. If you can't transact, then you don't have food, water, and energy. So what are you suggesting to people as a way, you know, not just to survive, but kind of thrive in these times? Order ab chaos, order out of chaos on the reverse angle, right?
Right. So I've written three books. One of them is called There's a Better Way Than a 401k. And then my main one is Being Your Own Bank. So what you need to do is separate yourself from the government. 401ks, government, IRA, SEP, simple, pension, Roth IRAs, government, banks, government. So when you deal with the government, they have full control. So what you need to do is build your own bank. And that's what all the millionaires and billionaires have been doing for over 175 years. You're talking about a $1 trillion industry that the average Joe doesn't even know exists. And it's called Section Code 7702 of the IRS, which allows my clients, which have over 2,000 of them and over $1 billion of protection and rollovers across the country, it allows my clients to have an asset that is liquid, no 59.5-year-old, no 10% penalty, no federal tax, no state tax. It allows my clients wanting the market to crash so that they can buy low when everybody else's assets are down. They didn't lose anything because there's a downside protection of a guarantee of 2%. It's been averaging 15% tax-free for the last 20 years, which is almost triple the return of the S&P 500 net, because you have to pay taxes on 401ks and IRAs. So I advise my clients to have that pool of money. Gold and silver is cool, but it's very expensive to get in, very expensive to get out, expensive to maintain it if it gets stolen. You know, and you're going against hedge funds to keep the prices down so that they can buy Apple, Google, Tesla, all companies that use gold and silver so they can manipulate the stock market. So if you understand how everything works, having that pool of money, because money is the option to do X, anything, my clients actually want it down because they can buy low, wait for the market to come back up and sell high, which is way better than dollar cost averaging.
Where do you think the economy goes then? So you've posited that essentially it'll be propped up at least through a Trump presidency, and somewhere within the first year, year and a half, that's where they pull the rug out under it.
Absolutely.
Well, we're talking just to November in the next 7 months. Do you expect them to simply keep it the way it's going and gradually, just incrementally, making it a little bit worse? You're paying 10 cents more for this, 20 cents more for that. We're taking 2 ounces out of this product that used to be 12 and 10. So shrinkflation, inflation, to kind of bide their time through this election period?
Absolutely. It's all about boiling the frog. Ooh, it's a little bit warmer in here, but I'm staying. Oh, it's a little bit warmer in here, but I'm good. And then once they allow Trump in, give it a few months, maybe 3 to 6, Republicans will be high-fiving, conservatives have something to conserve, so they usually have more money than the average person. And so they're going to get excited, put their money where? In the market, in crypto, in real estate, right? Because there's a lot of my clients' money holding money on the sidelines. And so they're going to get excited. And then the big hedge funds, all they have to do is just all come together and buy puts and then pull the rug. All Republicans lose their butt. And then they get to buy back all the Republicans' assets at an extreme discount. It is so easy, in my opinion, to see if I was them, what would I do? I'd want to humiliate Trump. I'd want to buy more assets at a cheaper discount. I'd want to keep the facade that the economy is great under Biden until they allow Trump in. And then now they're going to argue what we've been arguing, right? Because what do Democrats do? They always blame you for stuff they do. That's what they've been doing. Go back the last 10, 12 years. Everything they blame Republicans doing, they're doing it at that time of blaming them. So they're going to do the same thing with the economy.
When we talk about Bitcoin and kind of pulling the rug under, they're in ETFs now. Ethereum is in ETFs. You know, you at least have those two outside of an altcoin. Do you feel like when they do pull the rug out, they do a switcheroo to a new type of coin, or because the BlackRocks, the Vanguards are invested heavily in those, they kind of regulate them in a fashion we haven't seen?
I think when they pull the rug, every asset class is going to fall. And if you don't have an asset that's tax-free or liquid, you're going to lose everything.
So you think all bets are off on crypto, that even the mighty Bitcoin could go down to basically nothing and worthlessness?
How many people did they kill with COVID? How many people are they going to kill with dropping the market?
Bold statements, Joe Lombardi, I got to tell you. IronHawkFinancial.com is where you can check out his stuff. Go do that right now. Thank you so much for joining us, brother. Really interesting conversation. Guys, the first hour is on its way out. We got a whole nother hour lined up for you. You're not going to want to miss it. We're going to be talking what's going on in the Middle East, school world order, and more. This is the Jason Burma Show, and we'll be back with more TNT Radio Live after this.